So tired, you don't even know.
Well, you know, it's probably a good time to fight to the death.
Sure, that's when I'm at my peak awareness and such.
I think that's generally the advice people give, is to be as exhausted as possible. Might I inquire, why are you tired? Were you doing a thing?
I went to bed really late, and then I woke up early-ish, and then I couldn't go back to bed, and then I got up and did work. And then I drank a bunch of cold brew, and that helped for a little while, but then it didn't help anymore.
Might I recommend something called a schedule?
No. You may not.
It's this thing that I'm just gonna throw out there. It's a life hack where you go to bed around a set time and you wake up around a set time.
Well, it's the first part is usually okay. We go to bed around a set time. It's a very bad set time, but then my bladder's all like, "Hey, you need to wake up," and then I wake up because I'm an old man, and then I look at my phone and. The work related Slack things were blowing up a little earlier than I thought, so I'm like, well, I guess I should.
I got a question.
Go do those.
What is early?
Oh, when did the Slack messages come through? Like 9:30 or something?
Oh, like the start of the workday.
That's early for me and the people I work with, especially considering I go to bed at like 4 a.m.
Ah, yes, you and your associates.
Yes, I'm a John Rodericker. I go to bed. Right before the sun comes up.
Yeah, the nice big piece of chocolate cake, and then you go to sleep around 3 a.m.
Well, kind of, actually. For our anniversary, we were gifted a gift card to a local, well, it's not local, to a national fondue chain I'm sure you're very familiar with.
Could it possibly be the Melting Pot?
It could, actually. And we went there and we ate a bunch of food, including a big old pot of chocolate. And then we came home and drank some more alcohol and then went to bed late.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know.
You poor guy.
I was at peak performance before bed, and then once I awoke, ready to fight to the death.
You were a regular melting pot of performance.
Yeah. It's a very stupid restaurant. It's, you know, I haven't been in a very, very long time, and I don't think we would go if we didn't have the card or whatever, but... they have like, you know, here's our seasonal specials. It's like it's kind of a set menu, but not quite. And it's laminated and it looks really terrible and cheesy. But they're like, oh, this one has unlimited meats and stuff. And we're like, sure, why not? But it's really bad idea to do that because you really don't want to go back for more meats because you'll just keep eating meats and then you'll want to die. And then they'll be like, here's a giant pot of chocolate. And it's like, oh, God, I got to eat the chocolate now or I'm going to feel terrible.
Sorry.
Yeah, I ate a lot of food yesterday.
You poor thing.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate your sympathy.
As genuine as it is.
Yeah, what have you been doing with your day off? It's the daytime. We're recording in the day. The sun is up. It's weird.
Yeah, I wasn't quite sure what to do with myself. It's been a long time since we recorded during the day. We recently had the 3-year podcastversary or whatever. Originally we used to record during the day because I wasn't employed. So it was a fantastic time. But that happens less and less over the years when you're like working and stuff, because as you might imagine, they have a schedule where you are expected to be there. Like let's say around 9 a.m.
No, my work day starts at 11:30.
I just thought I'd brief you on what other people's expectations are.
Hawaii time. Remember, I operate on Hawaii time.
Island time, Dan.
Specifically the islands of Hawaii, because I need a 3-hour time difference to be on par with everyone.
Okay. All right. Well, what happens when you... Because you were in Hawaii for your honeymoon, so when you're in Hawaii, are you just on, like, Guam time? Like, what are you on when you're there? Did you sleep in, or were you up in Adam?
No, there was sleeping in. But, you know, you're out in the sun, it tires you out. You don't stay up quite as late. Plus, you're in a shitty hotel, so you don't really want to, like, hang out and watch TV in there. But, I, you know, it was the reverse. Rather than waking up and reading the 400 tweets or whatever that is in my timeline, I would read them right before bed at midnight. And then I would say hello to Casey List because he was awake and doing things. And I was like, all right, I'm going to go to bed now. Which is actually kind of the case now. It's like, it's embarrassing now how often I'm awake when people on the East Coast are getting up and going to work. And I don't want to tweet at them because then they'll be like, why are you awake? And I'll be like, well, I'm always awake and just, I'm watching you.
Okay.
Like two days ago, I legitimately went to bed like as the sun was coming up, which was really depressing, but everyone was up and I wanted to be like, hey, everybody, I'm here too. Good night.
Yeah. When I, was making arrangements for today because of the surprise, surprise availability. I was talking to Jason to coordinate, and he's like, oh, it'd be great if we could have dinner and do all this other stuff, because originally I was just going to be at my house and do the recording like usual. My crummy apartment. But we worked this out with the schedule, and he was like, why did that take so long? Like, when is Dan going to get back to you? And I'm like, I don't know if he's up yet. Cause I think I messaged you right at the start of your workday. And he's like, it's 10 o'clock. Like, why isn't he up? And I'm like, that's early.
Cause he goes to bed when the sun comes up.
Yeah.
See, we like to be nocturnal. One, because we're terrible people, and two, because the sun is miserable. So any hours that you can take out of the daylight hours and move into the nighttime hours is preferable.
Yeah. I mean, it's still as hot there at night as it is here during the day.
It's not great. Yeah, it was still like 102 when we got out of dinner last night at like 11:30 p.m. It's like, oh, let's go for a walk. And it's like, not really. Instead, there was an Albertsons next door or whatever. Like, let's go walk around the Albertsons before it closes because it's air conditioned. Some people take a stroll in the park. We stroll through grocery stores because it's cold.
Did the melting pot not need to actually heat anything up? They just put the chocolate in the pot and handed it to you and it just naturally...
Yeah, basically, yeah. No, they would turn it on, yeah. There was steam coming out, and they were, like, sweating, because it's like, oh, God, we got heat on heat. No, it was air conditioned in there, but it was weird being a weekday that there was absolutely no one in there, and it was already weird like that, and then, like, it always takes longer than you think, and we were there technically, like, past close, so, like, everyone was leaving except for, like, our waiter and, like, one other guy, so it's like, oh, this is just so many kinds of awkward.
Yeah, see, I've never been to a melting pot. I am under
This is something I actually wanted to talk to you about. Do you have opinions on A, the melting pot, and B, fondue in general?
Okay, well, we will get to these. I have never been to a melting pot location. However, I am under the impression that their popularity has waned over the years.
Really? A $200 meal that takes 2.5 hours?
Yeah.
Where you're sticking forks in boiling liquid and you can only take one bite every 3 minutes? Yeah, that's... not really the top of everyone's priority list anymore, except for, like, anniversaries and Valentine's Day or whatever.
Yeah, there was one in Sarasota. I didn't go to it. But yes, that is basically the impression that I got. And so I have never gone out of my way to enjoy it. Now, as for fondue...
There's still one in downtown Portland, which I find baffling. Like, it's right across the street from the hotel that I always stay at when I'm in Portland. And I see it, and it's like an underground one. So it's got, like, this big, like, cement, like, gazebo structure for the staircase that goes down there. And it's just like, how is this still in business in Portland?
Sorry. I don't know. You think they have a local artisan chain of melting pots that they would do themselves?
No, I mean... Melting Portlands.
Yes.
And then you cook everything.
Cook everything in hipster blood. I don't know.
Over an open fire, I was going to say.
Yeah, that too.
but fondue in and of itself, eh? Are you familiar and do you have a thought on it?
I'm familiar. It seems vaguely appealing, but like if I'm in a chalet, like it's not something where I'm just like, ooh. Pot of melting cheese.
Well, but, you've got the cheese kind, you've got the chocolate dessert kind, and then you've got the basically boiling cauldron of broth and wine that you stick uncooked meats and seafood and vegetables into.
Yeah, I don't like the broth one because I don't like shabu shabu, and we've talked about this before in the past. And you feel like I'm wrong about this, and so does everyone else.
What's wrong with build it yourself, cook your own meat sort of thing?
I don't really like cooking my own meat, and I. I mean, but I don't enjoy sticking in hot broth. Let's put it that way. Yeah, and that goes for other sorts of tableside barbecues and stuff. Although I will.
Oh, does that mean you don't like Korean barbecue?
I will admit that I like some Korean barbecue. It turns out it is highly dependent on the ventilation system of the place and how things are set out. There's a lot of thought that needs to go into how you burn something on a table, because it's really sort of intricate. Like, have you ever been to a gukkaku, which is the Japanese version of Korean barbecue?
It's
a chain.
Don't know. Where is it?
Out here and stuff.
The last one I went to was in like a giant, like half abandoned mall, just sort of south of little Tokyo over there. So I don't know what that one was.
Okay. I don't know. But yeah, there's Gokaku, which is a chain of very, I would say lower end kind of stuff. But there is a restaurant called Tokyo Kalbi, which is near where Jason's apartment is, and they have fantastic food, and it's almost entirely completely empty. I'm not sure how much longer they will ever stay in business, but I like that one because it's also quiet, and they will come by and change the grates out so that the whole entire place doesn't smoke up. So it's nice. Although they unfortunately have the giant semicircle of white onion that will come out on some of the plates, and then they'll be like, oh yeah, we totally want you to put that on the grill. And I'm like, no, I'm not never gonna eat that. Like,
aren't you supposed to season the grill with the onion by like rubbing it around and stuff?
No, well, sometimes they don't really rub it. Like at the end of the meat order, if we just leave it on the plate and the guy's like, oh, I'm gonna clear the plate, and then he's like, oh, you didn't eat your onion, and he just drops it right on the middle of the grill and then he leaves, and I'm just like, what am I supposed to do with this burning onion thing now? Because
to eat it, you got to get over your onion hatred.
No,
onions
no.
are good.
See, here's the thing: when you just stick that giant semicircle wedge of white onion on a grill, it just chars on the outside, and the inside stays completely raw. And I hate it. Hate
Sounds
it so much.
Delicious.
No,
you got to cook it till it's black on the outside and mostly cooked on the inside.
Gross. I mean, I like caramelized onions and stuff, but you can't caramelize on those kinds of grill setups. That's beside the point, because we should probably pivot our conversation from this to...
We're gonna pivot? Are we talking about MTV or iPads?
Well, apparently today they did some big layoff at MTV to pivot to video, but that's weird because they have TV in the name. But so...
Music television, pivoting to video.
Yeah, but let's... Let's instead pivot to the movie we discussed, which is Mortal Kombat, which is a movie based on a video game, and it's directed by Paul W.S. Anderson, who has to be known as Paul W.S. Anderson because of legal reasons, but is really just Paul Anderson. So I'm going to call him Paul for this, because we're such good friends. But it is a bizarre movie, and I liked it as a kid seeing it, but it is bad. It is a very bad, bad, horrible movie. And it has a fantastic soundtrack.
It seems like half of the songs they just pulled straight out of the arcade machine.
No. None of these were in the arcade.
The voices in the songs were out of the arcade machine,
well,
I should say.
They have
the song.
The main theme song one. Apparently it was by the Immortals or whatever was into the group, and they did that before the movie even came out. That was like 93 or something, and that's the, you know, test your might, finish him, that one, that one. Mm-hmm. With the clips, that's the one, that techno one. Mm-hmm. I love that, unabashedly so.
that's your Florida showing right there.
Yeah, that's It is just trashy techno garbage, and I eat it up.
Did you go to a lot of arcades? Did you play this game as a kid?
We did not really have arcades around very much. There were places where you could go that might have an arcade machine, but you were really gambling on what they chose to have there. So mainly what I did was play Mortal Kombat at home. We had Mortal Kombat 2 for the Sega Genesis, and so I played the crap out of that against my little brother, he would sometimes not want to play with me because I would take the turbo controller, and there were certain moves you could do with Raiden that worked out way better on the turbo controller, and you could basically just sort of teleport across the screen and like beat the crap out of somebody nonstop. So it made it less fun if you were playing against somebody and you didn't have a turbo controller, etc. So I could understand his being upset about that, but yeah.
Yeah, I have Mortal Kombat 3 for my Super Nintendo here, but I played the first and second Mortal Kombats quite frequently at our arcade. That and like Street Fighter, those were my jams. But we had it was one of those mini putt-putt slash ride around an inflatable like water boat slash driving range slash arcade things where you would go and waste quarters during the summertime. So yeah, I know Mortal Kombat very well, and I enjoyed playing it a lot. To the point where it's all like, you know, the secret moves, and like there's secret hidden stuff that you could do if you did the right combo of stupid crap. I was all about that stuff. Like when I opened my Mortal Kombat 3 Super Nintendo box for the first time in years, because I forgot about it, and then I just put it out in the other room. It had like a little post-it note with like secret moves on it written down from when I was like 10 years old. I was like, oh, this is terrible. Look at my handwriting. It's still pretty bad, but it's more embarrassing than... But I, Mortal Kombat is something I was very familiar with, and then I'm pretty sure I saw the movie back then. I don't know if I saw it in a theater, but this movie is both bad and stupid.
I saw this in the theater, in Old Hyde Park, AMC 7, which has been converted 50 times into different movie theaters, and now it's something that serves booze, called Cinebistro. But they had that. We saw that there, and I bought the soundtrack on cassette tape. It is the first soundtrack I ever purchased. Unfortunately,
Mortal Kombat was.
I was a small child. God, it's not like, man, I had a collection of movie soundtracks, but this is the first, you know, one that I bought because I just loved it so much. And it was one of those tapes where if you had the right kind of tape player, it would actually be able to skip back to the start of a song. Like, I don't know.
Yeah,
how
totally.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. I don't know how what the technological term for that was, but it was fun, very fancy stuff, and I deeply enjoyed that because then I could skip right to all of my favorite techno beats that I enjoyed so much because I didn't have a CD player.
All your favorite techno beats.
Yes.
and you said the main song was your favorite techno beat.
I would say so. Yeah, I mean, the trancy orbital is so much fun. I love it.
It's the only song that they could afford to license for this movie, and it was in every movie in the mid '90s. Let's see, our budget says $18 million estimated. That's a lot of money. I mean, I guess it's not a lot of money with the visual effects that are in here. Oh God, this is 1995. Also, so you gotta you gotta compare this up against Jurassic Park.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it has two movies with reptilian characters in them. I will leave it to your imagination to guess which one was more successful.
You know, I'm pretty certain I was confused then, and I'm still confused now about how they tried to retcon Reptile into being like this little monstery thing that
that doesn't make any sense. They're like, here's a predator effect, and then here's this reptile thing that'll go around and
but he can get subsumed into a rib cage of like a stone thing, and then the stone thing turns into looking like those other guys that you are familiar with, and then but not.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. I don't understand it. Genuinely.
I think 1 year for Halloween, I went as, I think, Reptile. It could have been Sub-Zero, but I'm pretty sure my outfit was green.
Yeah. I didn't gravitate towards playing the ninja characters very much. Ninja characters. We should probably get this out of the way. This movie has all of the sensitivity towards ninjas and monks and Eastern things as I don't know, a P.F. Chang's or something. Like, terribly sophisticated.
Everyone in Liu Kang's world wears robes and sits outside in like ruins and talks about destiny and stuff.
Yeah, like, how is that his grandfather? Did he have him first before he went to be a monk? Or like, questions that wouldn't occur to me when I was a small child. But I don't really think that they... because obviously this is not really well thought through, because this is something made entirely by white people and directed by a guy from Britain. And the original video game is Ed Boon and what's his name, Tobias, who did the stuff, and they're people who lived in Chicago, and we just import martial arts fighting movies, and that inspired them to do this. They claim more than Big Trouble in Little China was imported martial arts fighting movies. So there's not a lot of deep thought that goes into the arrangement of these items, and they just sort of grafted on this whole thing that they came up with about the different realms and fighting to protect Earth realm with this tournament thing that makes no sense. Like, what are the mechanics of that even? Because most of the stuff is not even like supervised. There are several matches where there's no one watching the match. Sometimes they draw like a ring around the floor and you're like, oh, that must be significant. Like they can't step outside that ring. And then other times they're just like, I'm going to just lure the other person out to a cliff through this hole in the wall and throw him to their death. And that's going to count in the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And they try to reference some of the stuff from the game, like the pit was the one where you've got the really narrow walkway where you fight on and then you knock them off as the finishing move and they go flying down and then land on the spikes. That's where the spikes were supposed to be, not in that room where they put them here, where the floor was apparently made out of tinfoil.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't really use any of like the levels to any effect from the game. They just, I don't know, they did some weird production design and they're like, well, I guess we'll just have them fight in the sand because we're here.
Yeah. I don't
know. The way they scattered the characters out throughout this movie, it's like, I guess if you're like trying to just take like the property of Mortal Kombat and make a movie, this is one way to do it. But it's not, it has nothing to do with like a fighting tournament. They're just like, well, we, you know, everyone has their favorite character, so we don't want to pick one to be the main guy. We don't want to kill all of them or make, you know, some better than others. So we'll just sort of have this like wishy-washy feeling, and it'll be a team of characters that succeed instead of just one.
No, no. I got to disagree with you here. This movie telegraphs 100% that Liu Kang is the center of this.
At the same time, they're like, well, Johnny Cage is a nice guy and we like Sonya and they should get together because they're sassy and stuff. And then Katana's there, even though I'm pretty sure Katana wasn't even in the first game. I think she was in the second game.
Yeah, she was added to the second one because the timeline of the movie's creation was after, I think, the first two games were out completely, shipped and done and stuff. But before the third game had come about. So they had to draw on that extra material, which is probably another reason why Shang Tsung doesn't look like a wrinkly old man.
Wait, so now that I think about it, Reptile was from the second game too, wasn't he?
I think he was like lurking in the forest or something, and then you could do a thing and then he would be there.
Oh, he was like hiding in the back of one of those cave levels. But was Goro in the first one? I think Goro was in the first one, right?
Goro was in the first one. It was Kentaro in the second one. It was basically a tiger stripe version of Goro.
Right. And then Shang Tsung was the bad guy in the first one, but then the Emperor was in the second one?
Yeah, but Shang Tsung was back in the second one, but like resurrected or something. But Shao Kahn was the major bad guy in that one.
He's the one with Skullface who shows up at the end of this movie in a very sort of like Masters of the Universe looking kind of way.
Yep.
Did they just reuse the Skeletor outfit? No, somebody.
And he doesn't appear as such in the follow up sequel to this, which is execrable. What happens after this movie is made is that they made another movie and they didn't even involve the people who made this bad movie. They had to go down one rung. And so it's the cinematographer of this movie as the director of the sequel. I don't know. I don't know how to describe that. I don't know. Did you ever see that one?
I feel like I did. I'm looking through the IMDb photos right now to see if I recognize any of it. And I don't. Wait, who is this lady? Who's the lady in the purple with the stripy hair?
That's Kitana's mother, which starts with an S, Sindel.
Mm.
And she was in the third game, and she's played by the actress who is Seska in Star Trek Voyager. Obviously no relation to Tulisa Soto, who plays the daughter, Kitana.
And here's a picture of Jax, who was name dropped and very briefly had a cameo in the first movie, but in the second movie is played by a different character. And the IMDb photo that they
played by a different actor.
And the IMDb photo that they chose to use for him clearly shows that his big metal arms are sleeves, because you can see sort of underneath the shoulder the way he's got his arm up on the wall.
Yeah.
But yeah, they had Jax as a partner to Sony. Oh my god, I forgot the cyborgs were in the second one.
Yep.
Cyrex. What were the other ones' names?
Cyrex and Ketchup. I can't remember the other ones' names. We would always just call them Mustard and Ketchup because one was yellow and one was red.
Wasn't there also like a hidden green one somewhere too?
Well, there was a hidden gray one, which was Smoke, which they made a cyborg Smoke for.
And then, oh, this image looks like it has a red.
Oh, and I think it was like a purpley one called Ermac or something.
Well, there's a red ninja and a purple ninja to replace Sub-Zero and Scorpion, presumably.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Anyway.
My goodness.
Things got really complicated after the second game because they just started doing a lot more palette swapping. And for those who are not familiar with the term palette swapping, basically what that means is they took a color that was there and they made it a different color. So that increased the number of characters they could have by the number of colors that they wanted to use.
We don't need to make a new outfit from wardrobe. We'll just hue rotate this.
Yeah, no. But obviously in this movie, they had to at least make a yellow outfit, a green outfit, and a blue outfit. So, you know, they had to pay the extra money for that. And they each had a different special face mask things, which were unique to them. But otherwise, they're identical.
The guy playing Scorpion had those white contact lenses in, and you could tell he really couldn't see because his eyes were wide open the whole time trying to figure out if he was going to run into something.
Yeah. But I think the thing that makes me laugh the most about Scorpion, there are several things. I find Scorpion entirely hilarious and completely non-threatening, is that he has that ridiculous thing that comes out, the spear, which in the game is just like an arrowhead kind of spear thing that's supposed to come out.
Yeah, he just throws it. It doesn't come out of his hand in the game.
And in this one, it's a creature. That comes out and does not track to the palm of the hand. it looks like it was like hand keyed to match. Like it wasn't actually like match move to the hand. So if you watch it, it sort of swims around as his hand moves.
I was going to ask you, did you see in the end there, in the whatever, the Underrealm or whatever it is that they go to, there's a shot that like, it's like a, I don't know, it's entirely CG or whatever, but it looks like a low flying like airplane and then comes up one of those tall buildings and the moon and sky like don't even move until like the last like four frames of the shot. So it's like zooming around and the sky just basically stays static.
Yeah, that was a big shot of them going up the Black Tower or whatever where the Emperor is supposed to be. And then it pulls in to reveal Sonya in her Barbarella future Wasteland Mad Max outfit that she has on, which is bananas.
It's good that Shang Tsung has a lot of hairspray in the Black Castle because you know, he needed to have her looking right for the final battle.
Looking right?
I don't know. Like, why would he put her in that outfit? Like, that's not her fighting outfit.
Well,
it's very much they're like, we're just going to do like a thing from King Kong or something and just like tie her up and...
The reason why they did that was so that Johnny Cage could turn to her and say, nice dress.
But then why did they give her like 80s hair?
I don't know why she has hair that is more suitable in Poison than it is in this movie, but she has it for reasons. Also, I have to say...
She's going
to
escape the Underrealm by hopping in the car with Whitesnake.
So, Sonya... Sonya is not super well treated here because she is she starts off as this agent, although she's depicted as supposedly competent in this universe. We as the audience know that whatever is happening makes no sense, and she's just sort of randomly jostling people in a nightclub with a gun that has a giant flashlight strapped to it.
listen here, Jack's character name drop. There's only one person I trust, and you're looking at him, and that's me, Sonya, because my name is Sonya, is basically as elegant as her dialogue is.
Yeah. But then she goes on to do some fighting and stuff, and she has a couple of retorts with Cage's advances, which are fine. And then she has the crummy lovey-dovey moment where she's like, oh, I don't want you to be hurt when you go up against Goro. It's going to make me so sad. Don't do that. You're going
to
kill yourself.
At least like when he's like, I can't allow Shang Tsung to hurt you. She's like, seriously?
Yeah.
Stop.
Yeah. But it all kind of falls apart because they're just like, yeah, she's a super-duper awesome fighter. And then they're like, oh, she totally can't beat Shang Tsung.
she's tied to a piece of wood or something, so she loses.
Yeah, well, but they have that dialogue where Raiden says, like, oh, yeah, she totally can't do it. It's like, well,
yeah, cause
he's kind of messed up.
Raiden can see into people's souls and, you know, oh, it's one of you three that will win. It's like, well, you could have just been honest from the beginning and said...
Well, this movie is all about being cryptic. Like, instead of just saying water, say the element that brings life. That's the way you
like,
gotta roll.
What is she being cagey about? Like...
Yeah, that's Johnny's job.
Was there some sort of like...
You flew right past that.
I did. It registered as I started talking again, and then it derailed my brain.
Sorry.
But no, there should have been some stupid exposition line about how she wasn't allowed to help these characters, or it would cause some sort of imbalance in this very important battle that has strict rules to allow the Emperor to take over the Earth realm or whatever.
Well, I like how they're like, these rules are very important. And then at the end of the movie, the Emperor just busts out of the top of the the temple, and he's just like, I'm here to like steal your souls. And it's like, okay, so what was that whole pretense about with the tournament and whatever?
Well, Raiden says Scorpion and Sub-Zero can't do any fighting on the boat because it's very important that they have to wait for the tournament to do anything, even though they're not really in the tournament. They're just like Shang Tsung's personal guards or whatever. But my assumption as to why the Emperor pops up out of nowhere at the end there is because they violated the rules of the tournament because they didn't, like, finish. Like, Liu Kang fought Shang Tsung or whatever, but then there's still Sonya and Johnny Cage in the tournament, so they all three have to fight until there's only one left. There can be only one, if we've learned anything from Lord Raiden.
No, unfortunately, the exposition supposedly is that Sindel... is resurrected on Earth, which causes an imbalance, which allows him to sort of sneakily invade Earth via that means. But that has nothing to do with what happens at the end of this movie. He just shows up. And there's just no logic for it. And then they just all
have
that
point,
pose.
Raiden's allowed to fight then because they all go into fight pose, but he's not allowed to fight in the tournament or whatever.
And then in the sequel movie... he's replaced with a worse actor who is just awful.
Who plays Raiden in the...
I can't even remember. I just remember... You know how I said I liked this when I was a kid and I recognize now as an adult it was a bad movie? The other one I recognized as a kid it was a bad movie. And I have no desire to watch it again. Mortal Kombat Annihilation. I just... Whoever inherited that
God.
Role...
James Remar inherited... you know James Remar, he's been in a bunch of stuff.
Nope.
Apparently he was in Dexter. You don't know him by name, but you know his face.
Okay. Well, I mean, I know him as his face as Lord Raiden, which is burned into my mind because he was not Christopher Lambert. So that was a bummer.
Let's see, what would you know him from? He's been doing a lot of TV. I guess that makes sense. Franklin and Bash? No. He has like angry... he was an X-Men First Class, Transformers Dark of the Moon. He has like angry cop face, so I assume he played a lot of angry cops in various things.
Yeah, anyway, this is beside the point.
He was in Battlestar Galactica. You like that?
I do.
And Blade Trinity.
I don't.
And Too Fast, Too Furious.
I didn't see that.
Have you seen any of the Fast and Furious movies?
Only the first one.
Oh, we should do all of those.
Nope. So let's move. Let's circle back to this movie and the convoluted means by which these people are attracted to a boat in Hong Kong. so that they can go to an island.
Some of them are tricked. Some come of their own volition.
Yeah, and Shang Tsung is mainly involved in the tricking part. And we get the thing at the nightclub with Kano, and it's like, oh, don't harm her before the tournament, even though he's totally fine with harming her before the tournament and whatever later on. It's important here or whatever.
Yeah, he has plans for her, but we don't really know what. I assume he wants to make her his like wife or something, but he's a sorcerer.
No, it doesn't make any... Just don't focus on it, because the movie doesn't. And then they have the thing with Liu Kang's like night sweats, where he realizes that he needs to leave his job as a bike messenger and go back home. I'm assuming he's a bike messenger. He just has his bike that's hanging on his cement loft wall or whatever. He's got to talk to the people about letting him play in the thing. And then Christopher Lambert shows up, all bedraggled. And he's like, no, you know, this is tournament stuff and blah, 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 and things. And he's like, oh, you can't bow to this guy. You know, he's just a beggar and whatever. And it's like, of course, they cast the god over these people as just a white guy from Europe. But whatever, that's fine.
They invented lightning in Europe, Joe. That's why.
Yes. Electricity. That was technically an American thing, but whatever. So Christopher Lambert, they do the things and they introduce him, but he doesn't do any electrical stuff. He just seems like a beggar, whatever. And he's like, I'm gonna go for vengeance and stuff and do the things. And it's like, okay, Liu Kang, you do you. And then Sonya like goes to the nightclub or whatever and chases after him to the boat. And Johnny Cage is in an airport hangar in Los Angeles and beats up the four guys, and the one guy forgets to fall down, and cut to the reveal that it was a movie that was being recorded and that the fight choreography was not fantastic. Surprise?
Because as we all know, being 90s kids, hashtag whatever, Johnny Cage is based on Nicolas Cage.
Well, he was supposed to be based on Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Well,
yeah,
not didn't really do a very good job of that.
No, but the fun part is Jean-Claude Van Damme was in Street Fighter, which is also a bad movie.
So bad.
Yeah. They do the thing where he goes to yell at somebody for sitting in his chair, and it turns out it's Master Boyd, and it's like, whatever. And Master Boyd.
Master Boyd.
Yeah. I missed that in the opening text crawl. Master Boyd is like, yeah, so I know you're not a fake, and being a fake is very important to this conversation we're having right now. So please go to this boat thing. I'm going to hand you this very suspicious scroll, and then I'm going to walk out of here through this parking garage and slowly dissolve into Kerry Takaga. So there you go. Hey, Shang Tsung.
Mm-hmm. You tricked him because...
reasons.
Wouldn't you think if Shang Tsung was like putting together a tournament that if he won, he would get to take over the Earth Realm, that he would A, want very few people there, and B, the people he did want there would be like bad fighters? Or is it because like he has to take their soul if he wins, so he wants to like pick good guys, so he takes their soul. He gets something out of it.
Well, I mean, arguably, these people who are selected are not that great. Like, Johnny Cage is good enough, but would not necessarily beat Shang Tsung, because obviously he doesn't even fight him. And Sonya Blade, Raiden flat out says, definitely can't beat Shang Tsung.
But like, why doesn't he just pop into a bar in Florida and be like, hey guys, want to fight? And they'll be like, yeah! And he'll be like, here, take this scroll and meet me at the dock.
I don't know. And maybe then, it's like jury selection where you have to like both agree or something. So maybe he and Raiden have to be like, yeah, that one. And then it's like, nope, objection. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's but the only reason I can come up with that they're not all just like complete idiots.
It's got to be some sort of quota before they can like set sail or whatever. Because if you only had like one, you can't really have a tournament for that.
No. Tournament of one. So they do the thing. We should probably say that there are clearly other people who are around, but they don't matter in the scope of this tournament or in the scope of the film.
There's as many or as few sort of like masked guards with scimitars at any given time as they need for whatever that scene is.
Yeah, and also other Earth warriors or whatever who come and go as the story dictates. So like when...
Oh yeah, there was that one part where they're like, no more Mr. Nice Guy, and then there was just a montage of guys doing front flips into the dirt.
Yeah, well, like River Rock. But
whatever it was.
Yeah, it's like, here are a bunch of smooth pebbles, flip over into it, please. But they...
They did all those shots. They did like seven of those shots, and it got a little bit old because you're like, I know the guy in the Goro puppet can't really like make it do all kinds of crazy stuff, or they don't have the time or the money, but like you couldn't have gotten like one shot of Goro like throwing a punch to see these guys falling.
Yeah.
No, it's all off camera because Goro, all he does is, I don't know, make like javelina noises and sort of like put his arms up in the air.
Yeah. Well, and he also, kills one of the other Earth warriors who was the guy who talks to Johnny Cage at the boat. And he's like, oh, don't worry, I know you're not fake. You can't fake those moves. And it's like, I don't know.
It was so ominous, too, because he like picked the guy up with his bottom two arms, and he had his top two arms available. And to my recollection, Goro did have a finishing move in the game where he did that, but then he took his top two arms and like squished your head, like he smashed him with like two fists. But in this one, he just like uses one of his arms to like punch you in the face, and then the guy dies.
Yeah, yeah.
Time to die. Like, they didn't put any effort in any of the finishing moves. And I would like to thoroughly object to the overusage of the phrase flawless victory, because it was used correctly once and incorrectly like three other times.
Yeah, because flawless victory in the game was awarded when you did not suffer any loss of points, but
yeah,
your
no
opponent,
damage whatsoever.
Yeah, they but didn't your even opponent was yet. Destroyed.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, so you couldn't really have flawless victories in almost all of the incidents where it was used. But... They do the stuff with the things where they're on the boat, and then there's clouds of snakes and whatever, and stuff's going to happen, and lightning and things, and then it's like, oh, well, he really is Raiden, and then walkie-talkies don't work and stuff, and they're on an island.
But look at your compass. That's how you know. You're
yeah.
in a different universe or whatever that doesn't have north, south, east, and west. Doesn't have magnetic poles wherever they are.
Also, I don't know how he knew that it would... affect a compass, but whatever.
Also, how did he know that her watch had a compass underneath?
All these are good questions. Also,
maybe
diagnoses
he saw her watch in SkyMall on the boat.
Yeah. Also, he says that her radio is fine. Her radio could have actually been broken, and they just would have had no way to test it appropriately on this island.
Yeah, I mean, you can't do a double blind study because where would you get the control group?
Right, exactly. So. Anyway, they go meandering through this island, and there's supposed to be the joke of going up a lot of stairs. I use joke with some heavy air quotes, because basically they just have a map painting. They go up, and then they're like, oh, man, I dropped some of my luggage, which they rely on luggage jokes three times. And then they,
'cause he's a rich Hollywood actor.
Yeah, because one time he pays Liu Kang to take his luggage to the boat, assuming that he is in some way a porter. And Liu Kang takes the money and, with a smile, tosses the luggage into the water. But it's only one of the many, many suitcases he apparently has. Johnny Cage says, oh, well, is it an Aston Park the car?
I would like to say that for me in this movie, it's a toss-up between Johnny Cage and Christopher Lambert as the best parts of the movie.
Yeah, well, see, Johnny Cage is, how should I put this, not very evolved. But he has a lot of one-liners.
And so does Christopher Lambert, too. And yeah. This one's, he's, like, mostly making jokes and, like, laughing to himself at, like, completely inappropriate times. I like that one where he's, like, he laughs and he's, like, yes, sorry, because I just realized, like, I made a joke about somebody, one of you dying or something.
Well, he like, punched the guy because he was so excited that Goro
oh, yeah,
got...
That was the other one later where he's, like, yeah, look at him go, and he hit the guy. He's, like, yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, he's
Lord Raiden right in here. I hit you in the shoulder. Don't worry about it. It's no big deal.
So absurd.
I'm trying to start a fight with the faceless scimitar guy.
Yeah, so they have the joke of luggage and stuff, and they get up to the top, and then Johnny Cage says, "Can't wait to see what the bathrooms look like," because there's all these foam statues all over the place, and you know they're foam because you just look at them and they're foam. But they're covered in brand paint, and they are introduced to Katana, and she's lying there with a parasol, just sunning herself in the cave. I don't know what the point of that was really. There's the statue, the weird abstract statue that's next to her of some sort of reptilian creature. And then Shang Tsung immediately walks up after they step 5 feet out of frame and says, "Reptile, watch her very closely. She must not talk to the humans." And
Yeah, I
then
love the proximity of all this stuff here. Like when he goes away to have his like secret meeting with Goro and Kano, and then like everyone overhears him, and then he hears them like move the rocks clumsily. He goes, "We're not alone." It's like, no crap. Like, even if they hadn't followed you, they would have been like 30 steps away, you dingus.
Everything is as far as it needs to be away from some things and as close as it needs to be in other things. It is a compression of geography that makes no sense. So he says that thing, and then the computer animated primary colored monster thing leaps out of there and hisses, and goes off and does things, and we have the start of stuff and a dinner where they're just bringing in the food, and then they flip over all the tables immediately, which is, I guess, one way to plan a dinner. And
We're
then
gonna
they
fight in the middle here, and then you got the really they do again. They do like an Indiana Jones thing where like the really buff guy likes to do a bunch of kicks and flips and show off how tough he is, and then Sub-Zero is just like, "I'm just gonna throw an ice ball at you and you're gonna die."
Yeah, and then his head explodes. Well, I'm sorry. He explodes and his head skitters across the ground
Yes,
to
and th
the.
this was the only flawless victory in the entire movie. And you know, like, this is another one of those things. It's a joke now. Like, I'm pretty sure it was a joke back then too. It's like Shang Tsung going like, "You want to see how scary I am? Look at me. I'm gonna have one of my minions kill one of my other minions. Are you guys scared now?" And they're like, "Well, not really. Why did you just kill one of your own guys? That was stupid. He looked like a good fighter too."
Well, Cary Tagawa can only chew up so much scenery in his role as Shang Tsung.
Oh boy, does he do everything he can. Like, his face has muscles that just other people's faces don't have.
Yeah, well, he does these sneers and just like this sort of like rictus, I don't know how to describe it, of just sort of Shakespearean fury whenever he feels like it. It's like the situation really does not call for this. Dial it back 11 notches. But it's one of those things that actually kind of makes it go from just being bad to being like a good bad movie, where that I kind of enjoy watching, is just because it's so over the top that
Like,
I
even
think
in
it's
that
fun.
opening scene, which we learn is a dream of Liu Kang's, where he's seeing his brother get beat up and then his soul stolen, like halfway through, he starts breaking the fourth wall and like shouting at the camera, and it's like, "What is happening here? Oh, it's a dream, but still, why are you doing that?" Most random, like, if you're, first of all, who has dreams where you're not actually in it? And second of all, if you do, like, why, when at some point the characters start breaking the fourth wall and addressing you? I don't think that happens.
Well, it's not the fourth wall because he's
Oh, I guess
addressing.
it's like the three and a half, the third and a half wall or something. I don't
I
know,
don't know
'cause
if that how that
he's
works.
looking at us, but he's addressing Liu Kang.
But it's one of those things where it makes sense because it would be from his perspective.
I guess.
We are in his point of view.
But we don't know we're in his point of view because we haven't met him yet.
Well, yes, but then it's revealed that it's his point of view.
We haven't met him with his 3 times too long neck and his 4 times too long mullet.
Well, the mullet I think goes with the neck, but that mullet is really something. It is so feathery and fluffy, and just moves around with a graceful fluidity that you would not expect. But apparently, I'm
A
assuming they have a lot of great hair
graceful
care products.
fluidity.
Yeah.
It's gross and embarrassing and looks like it's just glued to his head.
Oh. But for some reason, he's always like, I don't know how to describe this. he's never really super dry in this movie.
He's often very shiny.
Yes,
except for his hair.
He's often very shiny and shirtless through most of the picture. Gets the chance to experience that for the first time when they start doing tournament things in the sand and stuff. And he deals with Kitana and she gives him all the secret advice of,
and he's pulling his punches and she's like, if you're not going to fight for real, there's no honor or something. He's like, what do you care if I lose? I have never met you before. I saw you one time in the temple and I love you so much that I'm willing to give my life and lose this fight for you.
Yeah. And Sonya Blade has her one very competent fight where she takes down Kano and snaps his neck with her finishing move from the game.
Blade never touches a blade.
Yeah, well, she is confronted by a blade.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kano's not very good at the whole presentation stuff. He's like, well, look what we have here. Where did this come from? Oh, it was on my belt because I brought it out because I was going to be very dramatic about it and stuff.
But There's a weirdness with Kato where he's like 97% spittle. In every scene, there's just spit flying out of his mouth.
It's like the meat that he was eating was probably not real meat, so he kept like spitting it out on the floor, just like leaving it in his mouth while he was talking. It's like, this is gross.
Yes. Well, that's one of the things Shang Tsung says when he goes down there. It's just like no dignity, and it like cuts to him just all like hunched over with the turkey leg.
Yeah, no dignity.
No.
None.
No. But so they do stuff, and then that's the basically the only fight that Sonya gets to have where she beats up somebody. The rest of the movie, she is prop-like. She has some dialogue moments, but
she
doesn't do anything.
She storms around a lot. She has some dialogue moments. She has some very high-waisted black jeans.
Yeah, well, it's... Don't complain about those black jeans because it could be worse. It could be the piece of leather that she's sort of crammed into as
but
a dress.
It had like all the frilly bits like sewn into it. So it wasn't like they just like grabbed a piece of leather and like turned it into a dress. It was like a very nicely tailored leather dress.
I don't know if I'd use nicely tailored, but
nicely tailored as a leather dress in the underworld.
It was like she was inside of a giant leather purse.
yeah, that's a good way to do it. It did have like stitching on it or whatever to make it look extra, make it look like a lampshade, basically.
It wasn't really even stitching though. They just basically had the string that formed the strap around to hold the top up. It just went through in and out through the leather like it was a piece of drapery so that it was threaded through. So I wouldn't really call it like stitching, but it was a very bizarre outfit. She doesn't get to do much else, and Johnny Cage gets his fight with Scorpion, which is a big set piece with a forest of mostly uniform trees, and then they jump into an eye distort into
by the way, I just looked, I was scrolling through the IMDb photos. Sonya's leather dress has like those little pointy metal studs that like punk rockers used to put on their hats and stuff.
Oh, as you do in Outworld.
It's so dumb.
Yeah, or Outland or whatever. It was outlandish.
Outlandish attire. Maybe he was just really into punk rock.
Mm. Maybe.
Anyway, what were we talking about? We're talking about his fight in the evenly spaced forest.
Yeah, the evenly spaced forest, and then he AT-AT walkers the thing, so it's stuck, and then they jump into the eye distort, and then they're in hell, quote unquote.
A lot of bamboo scaffolding in hell.
Yeah, also gym equipment, and barely disguised gym equipment, because there's that scene where he jumps up onto the bar and then does the whole spinny around thing, and you can clearly see it's a piece of metal.
I zoned out a lot during most of the fights because it's like, okay, I know the good guy's not gonna lose here, and then they're not really doing any special moves until like the very end of the scene, you know, so I just sort of like... Uh-huh. There's going to be some punching and kicking and flipping and stuff, and then like we'll come back to this when it's closer to the end.
Yeah. Well, in the games, the characters, even the humans, have a lot more, how should I put this, magical things that they can do.
Liu Kang threw fireballs.
Well, yeah, but in this one, he does this weird sort of lightning punch when he kills Shang Tsung, but you're not sure if that's an effect of him or if that's just because it was Shang Tsung that he was hitting, and Shang Tsung was currently like leaking souls or whatever, and so maybe he just ignited the leaking souls. But
that's a good point.
Yeah, but yeah. So you're not really there's not a lot of the magical-ish stuff. He does do the bicycle kick thing, where he's suspended in the air kicking for a prolonged period of time, which is impossible.
I also liked when he kicked that was when he kicked Reptile out through the little hole in the wall where Reptile was very clearly on wires doing spins backwards.
Yeah.
That was bad and dumb.
Yeah, well, I don't really care for the Reptile fight, to be perfectly honest, but we haven't even gotten there yet.
Especially because Reptile showed his power earlier when he was a little Reptile and he spit, I don't know, like steam in Liu Kang's face, because apparently they can't do the thing. Like, if he would have spit the acid his face like he did in the game, it would have been like, well, game over here because you killed Liu Kang.
Yeah, a little harder to explain that away. But so they do the stuff and whatever and the things. And they have more fighting, and Johnny Cage gets to beat up Scorpion, and Scorpion gets the skull head reveal that he does for his finishing move, where he breathes fire on somebody and destroys them. But in this case, Johnny Cage has a shield, and then he slashes him up, and then he bleeds glowing orange stuff and explodes. Mm-hmm. And right after he explodes, we get the Johnny finishing move of the signed autograph. All Hollywood style that he drops in the fire. So that was kind of nice.
I have some notes on Scorpion, because Scorpion was one of my favorite characters. And whatever, if they want to retcon the spear to be like an animal that comes out of his hand, that's fine. And the skull flame, I was happy to see that. The voice, like, they had him yell
get
some
over
of his,
here, come yeah, down they had, here.
They had some of the catchphrases, the get over here and the come here, I think were the two ones from the movie. But then, like, the get down here, and then when they first entered the Hell Realm or whatever, and Johnny Cage was like looking around, he goes,
welcome.
Like, what are you doing? Like, does he just talk like that all the time? Like, I'll have a turkey sandwich. Like, how does he
would
talk?
You like fries with that?
He sounds like Scorpion as Marv Albert or something. Is that just his voice? Because, like, he doesn't have any sort of subtlety in his mouth, because he doesn't have lips. He just has a skull.
Technically, he also doesn't have throat muscles. So I don't know.
He just makes sounds by, like, rubbing fire across, like, the bones in his neck or something.
I guess. That's apparently what that sounds like. Or maybe that's just a little thing in his hand that talks.
Nice to meet you. Like, I just want to see, like, a day in the life of Scorpion. Oh, God.
Mm. I mean, he's also the only quote-unquote ninja character that has any fighting moves and dialogue at the same time. The rest of them are all fighting moves.
They were able to do that because he didn't actually have to say anything.
Yeah.
Because he had his mouth covered.
Yeah. And the Sub-Zero stuff, because
I was very disappointed in their usage of Sub-Zero. He was another awesome ninja character who did cool stuff, but like they made him into like a Dragon Ball Z character where like his like generation of the ice bomb like took like 4 minutes or whatever.
Yeah.
So he's just like, oh, it's this big glowing thing of cold, I'm just gonna like throw a bucket of water, which is gonna turn into an icicle and stab him. It's like, no, Sub-Zero's awesome.
That's a very convincing argument, Dan.
Sub-Zero was a cool character. I like
Sub-Zero. I meant the way you had delivered that with that tone, where it just sort of trailed off at the end. didn't convince me. But yeah. Anyway,
I was trailing off my enthusiasm for the way they
enthusiasms.
Did it in the movie.
Sub-Zero, they do the fight thing, and it's sad because number one, the riddle that Katana gave him was sad. Number two, Raiden put those ice buckets there and drank a little bit of the water. So also, like, really leaning into this hint. I don't know why Raiden couldn't have just said, hey, I'm going to leave you some ice buckets. Some water that you can turn into ice.
There's a very fine line, legally speaking, in terms of, like, coincidence and helping.
But who rules on that?
I assume there's some sort of underworld Supreme Court that makes the decisions, because they've done nine of these tournaments and Shang Tsung has won or all nine of them. Yeah, and so this is his 10th one. And then somehow, like, if he loses this one, that, like, banishes them permanently. Like, he has to win. It's, like, 10 in a row or nothing. Like, it resets. Like, he can't just throw another one next week.
I guess. Well, it's also, it's once every generation. So.
Oh, I must have missed that line.
Yeah. So it's once every generation they can do this. Now, I don't know what constitutes a generation in the context that he is using it, because even in the context that you and I would use generation, there's some leeway in that sort of a thing, you know?
Well, then you've also got the thing where...
Because, like, we're technically millennials as a generation, technically. But technically. I don't think we have all that much in common with people who were perhaps born in the late 90s. I don't see it.
No.
I think of us more as Generation Y before they changed the name to Millennial. So you millennials can go enjoy your LaCroix and your Snapchats.
I got a little bit of some of the millennial, but yeah, there's a lot of weird stuff. But then when you talk about the generation stuff in this thing, there's also the, like, Katana is 10,000 years old, and she, like, harkens back to the last time that the Emperor actually did win, which was, I don't know, sometime in the last 10,000 years or something. But, like, so apparently he won their 10 tournaments or whatever, and he took over Earth, and then at some point banished from Earth, and then he wants...
Edenia, whatever?
So it took over her realm, is that what it was?
Yeah.
Okay. So he won that one a long time ago, but then maybe he was kicked out, or no, he wasn't kicked out, I guess, then if it wasn't Earth then. So he's never had the Earth realm in the past 10,000 years, but he's been trying for 10,000 years, so that's good.
Yep. Well, try until you succeed. I don't necessarily know what he wants the Earth realm for. It doesn't seem like they do anything where they are, except start bonfires and erect weird statues that half digest people or turn reptiles into ninjas. So I don't know what their economy is based on. Yeah.
Just shirtless guys with scimitars who bring out trays of food and then kick them over.
Yeah, I suppose. They, you know, have some more fights, and then it's like, oh, time to take out the big guns. Time to have Frank Welker as the voice of Goro come in. Puppet.
Goro's bad.
Puppet. I know everybody's always like, oh, CG is so bad, and there's a lot of bad CG in this movie, but that puppet, I swear to God, it is 100% puppet. 100% puppet.
Didn't you really feel the puppet's pain when
nope.
Johnny Cage punched him in the junk?
No. I did not feel the puppet's pain. But yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so they do the thing, and he chases them out on the cliff and pull out and matte painting and then dumps him off the thing, and then there's a slow motion falling to his death. Yay!
Well, but he also says the line, like, this is the part where you fall down or whatever, but he didn't get the line the same. He said it differently the second time.
Yeah. Also, Goro wouldn't know what that meant anyways. Only the audience would. So.
Which is fine. Like, Goro doesn't need to know. He's probably thinking, like, this guy's a jerk.
Yeah, well, he can ruminate on that to the bottom of the cloud thing. But I do like his line about, those were $500 sunglasses, asshole.
But he waits so long to say it. Like, you know, you mentioned, you said that line, like, in the Slack or something, and then I was like, he just crushed his sunglasses. Why is he not saying that line?
Well, you see, that's the funny thing, is he not only waits a long time till they get out to that cliffside, and then he kicks them, and then he says it, but there's this enormous amount of time from when he kicks him to when he's just standing there on the cliff next to him, and then he says it. There's a pause there, like a pregnant pause that should exist. Like, he should have just gone from kicking him to saying that. But I don't know what the timing situation was in editorial when they decided to make that call. Whatever. Goro dies. And it wasn't Liu Kang that killed him, because otherwise it would just be Liu Kang dispatching all of the people. But a consequence of this arrangement was that Johnny had agreed that Shang Tsung could challenge whoever he wanted to in a place of his choosing, and so Shang Tsung exercises that right to challenge Sonya in Outland, whatever. And they open the portal, and then they go into the blue slime and disappear. And then they half-heartedly chase after her, and they're just like, no, don't, you can't. And Raiden's like, yeah, whatever, don't go after her. Okay, well, now you can go after. And I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. And Christopher Lambert is like, yeah, there's nothing more I can do for you guys. My powers don't work there. So peace and good luck. And you'll find a guide if you look hard enough. And he could have just said that princess lady who was already helping you will totally go help you over there. But they don't do that for reasons of being cryptic for no reason. And then they go to the place and it's all bonfires all the time and the weird statue things. And you can see a skeleton that still has eyeballs that's being digested, like, I don't know, Scrooged style, like the ghost of teacher. Remember that one? With the skeletons inside of it?
There's
basically a cartoon skeleton inside of one of the gas lamp things.
Right, I thought that was just like trying to make scary gargoyle things or whatever, but apparently that's the thing. The if you accidentally fall into a statue, it'll
eat you,
digest you,
and turn you into a ninja. But only if you're a reptile. And so that comes to pass. What's weird about that though is that Johnny Cage is like, oh well, I guess he's got this. I'm gonna just wait off screen. For several minutes.
Stay here and protect. Wait, is he with someone? No, he's just standing there.
He's just standing there. The whole entire time that reptile scene is going, he's standing there.
Well, he's an honorable fighter, and he knows that it's got to be one on one for fights to be.
This isn't part of the tournament. It doesn't make any sense.
Everything that's in the tournament is part of the tournament. I think that's how it goes.
Yeah. Once you start the tournament, you can't stop the tournament. So they do the thing. And then he kicks him so hard he turns back into a gargoyle statue thing, and then falls out of it with a bunch of bugs, and then he crushes with a POV shot the reptile thing instead. And then he meets back up with Johnny Cage, who was recuperating, stretching, I don't know. And then
calling his agent.
Yeah, and then they have a Katana show back up, and she's just like, yeah. Hi, I'm gonna, you know, tell you some stuff, and then we'll go do the thing. This used to be a pretty place, and then it's not anymore. And he hopes to do that to Earth, so that's why this is bad. So let's go to the tower thing and do the stuff and whatever. And cut to monks, and they enter. I'm sorry, not cut to monks. Cut to that flying shot of going across really low over the ground, and then up the side of the castle thing tower, and then in through the window. And then it stops on Sonya just standing there,
in her King Kong chained. Outfit.
Yeah, in her horrible outfit. And this is the first reveal of her horrible outfit. And then they come down the stairs with the monks, and they all circle the thing. And Ching Sung is there, and he walks out onto the big dragon foil thing. And he's just like, "Hi, I bet you think this is probably full of chocolate, but it's not." He chats.
Don't understand his motivation here at all, because he challenged Sonya, and Sonya has to accept before they can fight. So, but she's like, "No, my friends are going to come." He's like, "Your friends are dead. You might as well just fight me." Like, it would be an easy fight, and I think he's just like trying to trick her to get her out of the way. But like, if he beat her, he still has to fight the other guys. So like, what is this reverse psychology trying to do?
It doesn't make any sense, because the tournament, technically, you have to beat everybody in the tournament. I think the movie is trying to say that if he defeats her, then they win, but that's not really how that works, because not everyone in the tournament has been defeated. So I don't know, but again, none of these rules make any sense. So
no, he's like, "I'll go tell the emperor that you forfeited, and then I'm just going to get the realm anyway. So you better fight me." It's like, nope, that's not. So she just
it doesn't make any sense. But also, I don't know how she knew that she didn't have to accept his challenge.
Because they said that line after she'd been taken away,
right? And I also
she
don't...
must just have generations of parents that are very versed in the rules of this tournament she's never heard of.
I also don't know what surrounded the costume change and the chaining up and waiting hours, I presume, to have this conversation. There is time that has passed in order for us to get to this point in here. So
it took a while to do that hair.
It was just one of the monk guys just trying to tease out the hair.
Shang Tsung. He wanted to make sure he got it right, so he did it himself.
Well, but it would be hard not to have these conversations though earlier. But so they have this conversation for the first time, for the last time, and it's like, oh, your friends aren't totally not going to come. And she's like, oh, I'm going to prove you wrong. They're totally going to come. And then they're like, oh, we're here. Surprise.
Like, what were you waiting for?
That was the cue.
You were waiting for the element of surprise that you just gave up immediately.
Yeah. And then my favorite part is Katana is just like, no. None of you other monks can fight these guys because that would be bad. We have to obey the rules of the tournament and don't betray my father because of reasons. And then Shang Tsung's like, don't you speak to me of treachery, and then makes angry faces. And then they do the thing where Liu Kang's like, I challenge you, and he's like, I accept your challenge, and then they fight. Which is a thing. And she had said the very ominous thing about how he needs to face his enemy, then face himself, and then face there's a thing. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, Katana is kind of like a fortune teller, but just like a really bad one, because it's like, duh.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, we're going to have to fight the guy. Also, if she was actually trying to be helpful, she could have said something like, he's going to use the souls of dispatched warriors to come after you, and they will burst out of the ground. Also, FYI, they only take 2 hits before they're incapacitated and no longer active soul things that have been resurrected. So make sure you just hit them twice, and then you'll be good. It doesn't say that. We see that depicted on screen, though. And then he's like, I'm going to go after you, Shang Tsung. I'm going to run back up these stairs. And then Shang Tsung turns back around and oh, no, it's his dead brother. And like, remember when our parents died and you promised you would protect me forever? I forgive you for letting me die and things. And he's like, oh, no, Raiden told me that everybody can make their own choices, and so you chose to die and whatever. It doesn't make any logical sense, this scene. And then they start punching and fighting and stuff. And then he eventually punches and fights and things, and then does the thing with the lightning, whatever, fire looking thing, and then Shang Tsung goes flying off the side and onto one of the spikes that came up ominously out of the tinfoil ground, and he turns up into a little shriveled skeleton thing, and then a beam of light shoots up and all of the souls are poorly composited flying out.
Don't forget Liu Kang wrongly awards himself a flawless victory.
Yeah, because he totally got beat up a couple times. This is definitely not a flawless victory. He could have just said, like, finish him or something, because he did, but whatever. And they have the thing with the souls and whatever and crap. His brother's soul comes up and he's like, hey, I forgive you and stuff, and one day we'll be reunited again, but not right now. Peace. And then jumps back into the river of souls, and then they're all gone. And then it's like, yay. Now wipe to the flag thing from the streamers and stuff. Everybody is celebrating at the temple where Liu Kang was. Somehow they got out of Outland there.
They took the boat, which, by the way, that's one of my favorite lines in this too, was when Kano's eating all the turkey legs and goes like, if he's such a powerful sorcerer, tell me this. Why has he got such a crappy boat? Like, really? That's what's on your mind? Why does he have a crappy boat?
Well, it's to show that he's interested in very material things.
Sure, but like,
yeah,
you went from A to like T there. You kind of skipped a few steps, but sure, yeah. Whatever. Kano.
Kano's not the brightest red eyeball glowing eye.
Yeah, not the brightest eyeball.
No, but they have the thing, and they're playing the orbital and stuff because they won, and you got to have your orbital at the end of the movie, as we've discussed many times on previous podcasts, and as I have said before, which I think you completely forgot about when you're watching this, is one of my favorite uses of orbital at the end of the movie, because I love it so much. It is just a perfect little capper for the mood. And then Shang Tsung bursts out of the side of the temple, and it's Frank Welker again, and he's saying threatening things, and then they're like, nope, fight pose, and then back to the theme music thing, and there you go.
Boy.
Oomps, 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 oomps. Nope. Oh, I didn't even tell you. Do you know what I was, you know what I was having for my bev to accompany this?
No.
Mortal kombucha.
It's terrible. Terrible. Was the beverage good?
It was pretty good. I got a different brand. I tried to revive instead of the GT. It doesn't have the colony of snot at the bottom. But it's very fizzy and carbonated.
Fizz is important. That's one of the main reasons I can't buy LaCroix anymore, is because it's barely fizzy in the first place and the fizz runs out after like 5 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, well, this also collapses in terms of the fizz retention. Much like champagne, I would say, where if you leave it sitting out, like it loses the bubbles because they have escaped.
I'm sorry about your kombucha's fizz retention.
Oh, well, I've finished it now. It's no longer a problem.
It's good. This movie's stupid.
It's stupid, stupid fun. Did you know
Opened
that
up
when I
the
pulled it
door for
up,
Paul W. S. Anderson.
it started his career, and it's not even the first. It's not even the only video game movie that he did. But Resident Evil, and his future wife Mila Jovovich. He would go on to do Event Horizon after this. You love Event Horizon.
I do like Event Horizon, even though it's cheesy and badly made. Well, I mean, it is 1997, but
Yeah.
whatever.
Well, it was just 2 years after this.
Event Horizon needs to be rebooted in a very serious, very dark, horrible way. And I think we're ready for a reboot of Mortal Kombat with like an R-rated kind of like Dread style filmmaking.
I don't think so. I don't think it deserves to be serious. Like if you look at these games, they're ridiculous. Like you have the what is it, Boone or Tobias, and they like slide out into the screen and go toasty. Remember that?
I do, but I don't
Yeah.
remember why. Isn't that when
Like they're
Scorpion takes his hat off and blows flames all over you and like burns you to crisp?
I don't remember. But the games are just absurd, and they have all kinds of jokes. Remember Bay Ballades?
Yes.
Yes. Instead of a fatality, finishing move, you could turn someone into a baby, and they would say Babality.
Wasn't there also some more inappropriate ones?
Well, yes, and there was also like different kinds of friendly things you could do. Not this is not something that needs a serious dark treatment. This does not need a Christopher Nolan style Dark Knight Returns kind of a thing going on here.
Probably.
Yeah, and then Tom Hardy comes out as Scorpion. You should get down here. I think it would be the best for capitalism, blah blah blah, et cetera.
I would watch Tom Hardy as Scorpion.
No, I don't. It just seems really poorly considered. So my point is, it needs a certain level of absurdity, and I just don't know if the market is prepared for that sort of a thing. Supposedly there
Also,
was.
go ahead.
Supposedly there was a YouTube machinima line of episodic content that came out.
I feel like I've seen some of that.
I didn't see any of it, but I noticed it when I was doing research about certain things for this film. There's that. I'm sorry you don't enjoy the humorous aspects of it, but one thing you should know is that when I pulled this up on Netflix, it said it was a 93% match for my interests. Which is apparently what they do instead of showing you star ratings now. So that should tell you all you need to know.
I believe it.
Either that or my interests have been so influenced by the bad movies that we watch that it skewed it even more towards being a better match. But yeah.
Well, I'm glad you appreciate the movie for what it is.
And thank you for finally doing it.
Do we have to do the second one?
No, I don't really even remember what happens in the second movie very much at all. I didn't like it then, and I don't really know if I want to revisit it now. I don't see any value in it other than we could just tear it into tiny, tiny little pieces.
All right, I'm on board with that.
Mm-hmm. You would tear it into tiny, tiny little pieces and then dunk them in broth.
Mmm. Sounds good.
Mm-hmm. Mortal pot.
I feel like a mortal pot in this office right now.
It's pretty toasty.
It's very warm.
Pretty toasty? No. So anyway, there we go.
My God.
We've concluded this broadcast session. We have our flawless victory against this movie, where it scored no punches against us.
We're going to claim a flawless victory whether we earned it or not.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we roll.
We won the tournament.
We win all the tournaments because we're the only ones here.